OAK Files, the ultimate Raiders podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The big interview.
Let's talk some Raiders, and to do that, from Black Hole Banter, we bring in our friend James Arcelana, who's visited with us before about the Oakland Raiders, but this time I would imagine with an even bigger smile on his face. James, that was a big road win over the Saints, wasn't it?
Oh my God, it was huge. I mean, especially the way it happened, you know, to win in a shootout on the road against Drew Brees, that's pretty epic stuff.
And one of the things that, you know, has been talked about, we'll get to the two-point conversion call and all of that here in just a moment. But, you know, I've actually heard some folks that have been critical of the Raiders saying, well, wait a minute, you know, this is supposed to be a good defense. They got into a shootout. But I guess my response to that would be everybody gets into a shootout with Drew Brees and Sean Payton and the Saints. I don't think that this should surprise anybody. And I don't really think that it should make anybody down on the Raiders defense. Do you agree?
I do agree. And, you know, I think there's a couple things to consider. Number one, it's a defense with a whole lot of new parts. I've been saying for a while, they're probably going to take a little bit of time to really fully gel. You saw that with both the defensive line and the secondary. You know, and then the other thing, like you pointed out, it's Drew Brees. And you know, getting a shootout with him is not necessarily a bad thing, especially when you come out winning. This is the kind of game that the Raiders in the past would find a way to lose. This time they found a way to win. That's a significant step towards the playoffs if that's where they want to be going.
Going up against that team, you knew that it was going to be a shootout, but let's talk about how the defense performed specifically, whether or not you saw what you wanted to see from the front seven, from the secondary. Were there places that, even though it is Drew Brees, that you still kind of were left after the game saying, okay, that's a concern going into week two?
Yeah, you know, the corners had some issues with the speedy wideouts on the Saints. But that's something, if you followed the Raiders, you knew was going to be an issue this year. You know, the corners, Sean Smith and David Amerson, are both big guys who like to jam you on the line and play physical. They're not great at speed. And there are a couple times they just plain and simply got beaten by speed. And, you know, part of my issue with the defense on Sunday, was the play calling. There were too many times where you saw a linebacker lined up on Willie Snead, a wideout, and that's part of the reason he had such a huge day. Malcolm Smith should not be covering wideouts. And then you also saw times where Sean Smith was not getting help over the top, despite the fact that we know he struggles with speedy wide receivers. Had he gotten help over the top on that 98-yard passing touchdown, probably wouldn't have gone 98 yards. So, you know, part of it, I think, is they need to recognize the deficiencies on this team in the secondary and scheme to those deficiencies.
Over on the offensive side of things, actually, we'll get to Derek Carr in a moment, but I want to start with the running game. Any concerns or frustrations with the fact that Latavius Murray couldn't even crack 60 yards, or overall, will you take it based on how that game was in terms of being a passing shootout?
You know, the Raiders came away with 167 yards on the ground, which was one of the highest numbers for any team in week one. So while Latavius Murray himself didn't really have an amazing game, overall, with the core of backs that they have, it looks like they're going to run the football this year. That's all you really want as a Raiders fan. You just want a consistent running game so that that passing game can get off. And I think that's what we saw on Sunday. You don't need Latavius Murray to go off. Sorry to all the fantasy fans. The combination of the backs will be good enough, I think.
James, when you look at Rashard's numbers, you see three carries for 84 yards, but you know, 75 of those came on one. But let's go to the three carries part of it. Do you see him being a three or four carry guy a game, or do you think that number is going to go up and he's going to be a bigger part of the running game?
I have to imagine it's going to grow. He and DeAndre Washington, the fifth-round draft pick, have kind of been, you know, battling back and forth for touches. And anyone who saw he did a lot more with his touches than Washington on Sunday. Everyone saw the 75-yard touchdown run. But early in the game, he caught a shoestring ball down his feet that Derek Carr threw as he had pressure in his face. You know, barely picks it up from touching the ground and then scampers another 10 yards for a first down. It was a huge play at that time. So, you know, I think Rashard has shown he's valuable in the passing game, valuable in the run game. And I imagine his snaps and touches are only going to increase every week.
Looking at the receivers, everybody's very familiar with Amari Cooper. He wound up with 11 targets total. When I've talked to Raiders fans and folks that cover the Raiders, I've said numerous times that I think Michael Crabtree is underrated when it comes to a wide receiver. He also got 9 targets. I think you've got a clear 1 and 2, but James, we also saw Clive Walford, which I think is somebody that we may be seeing more of over the next few weeks. What do you think?
Oh, I completely agree. I actually thought Walford was a guy that we might see a lot more of in week 1, simply because everyone knows about Michael Crabtree and Amari Cooper. You know, defenses are going to be focused on them, but not everyone realizes how much of a threat Clive Walford can be. And so I do think he's going to have a pretty big year because of all the other targets and playmakers on offense that he might be forgotten sometimes. And he does have the potential to be a very, very big impact player on that offense.
Well, let's go to the quarterback, the most important position on the field. We know it. Your assessment of Derek Carr's performance?
I mean, I thought it was great. He really, you know, it was one of those performances that he kind of almost quietly put up over 300 yards and a touchdown. There were some moments when the offense sputtered. I think it was like 6 drives in a row where they didn't score any points. It was 6 punts. But overall, he didn't make any mistakes. You know, the biggest mistake he made was on a run where he decided to jump head first out of bounds and, you know, could have hurt himself. But otherwise, he was solid with his decision making. He was accurate. You know, he put up a good number in terms of yards and, you know, no interceptions. So really, I can't complain. I think it was a great performance for him.
Do you think that they, as an offense and as a team, I mean, obviously he cracked 300 yards, the one touchdown, but we know we've visited about this before that, you know, he may not, if they can get the running game going, he may not need to get to 300, 350, 375 in the games and be able to be at 250 or 275, and this team will be satisfied because they're running the ball well. Is that the kind of balance that you think that Jack Del Rio and the offensive squad wants to see?
Definitely. I think the type of offense that Jack Del Rio would like to see is one that is a heavy run first offense that does a lot of ball or time control with ball control and really goes run first. Now, not really sure they're going to be able to do that, though, because I think if you watched the game yesterday, you saw that it was really the passing game that kind of opened up the run game for them. There's no question that the biggest strength on this team is their passing game with Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, and Michael Crabtree. And so until they can get that run game going even stronger, I really think the better strategy would be pass to run. You know, get things going with passes and then open up your run game that way. And I think that's how they, you know, things went intentionally or not on Sunday. And I think that's probably the better philosophy moving forward.
When you look at the towards the end of the game, obviously one of the most talked about things that came out of Sunday's NFL action was the decision by Jack Del Rio to go for 2, a decision that sounds like had already been solidified in his head and wasn't necessarily a snap decision. What's been your take and what's been kind of the vibe from the fans on him being a little bit of a gambler on that one?
I mean, I think everyone in the fan base is nothing but ecstatic about what happened on Sunday. And that might be one of those things where, you know, it went the right way. So, of course, everyone's ecstatic. And had it gone the wrong way, people probably would have been wanting to hang Jack Del Rio. For me personally, I don't know that there's a right answer. You know, it's such a tough decision because, you know, ESPN stats tweeted out that it was something like 40% chance to make it if they went for 2 and 50% chance to win if they didn't go for 2. And, you know, Jack Del Rio quote tweeted that it's a good thing he was the one coaching the Raiders, not them. And I think what's important about that is that Jack Del Rio was there in the moment. He saw that the defense wasn't stopping anything from Breeze. He was concerned about if they went to overtime, that they just wouldn't be able to hold together. If Breeze got the ball first, that the game would be over. He made a decision to trust in his offense and trust his defense to do a bend, don't break, and stop the field goal. And so I think in that situation with those specific circumstances, it might have been the right decision. But is there a black line rule as to whether or not he should have gone for 2 with, you know, trailing by 1 point at the end of the game? I think it really depends.
Have you had any update as of when we record this, James? Have we got any update on Watson at right tackle in terms of injuries or any concerns there on the offensive line?
No, not to my knowledge. I believe it was an ankle, low leg injury. No idea how severe it is. You know, if you followed the Raiders much at all last few years, this is something that you've been, you know, just knocking on wood, hoping wouldn't happen, because Watson gets injured every single season. And when he got hurt, you know, I just kind of shook my head and thought, well, I knew this was coming eventually. It just comes at a really terrible time because Austin Howard is also hurt. And then, as you saw, Matt McCants got hurt a few plays later.
We talked about having to face a high-powered offense, and you know, Drew Brees frequently is kind of in his own stratosphere. But within his own division comes the next opponent, a home game for the Raiders, as the Falcons will come. Matt Ryan, what are you going to be looking for specifically out of the Raiders in this matchup for Week 2 against Atlanta?
You know, first and foremost, you're hoping to see Sean Smith have a bounce-back week against Julio Jones. You know, I don't know if we discussed it yet today or not, but obviously a lot of people were talking about the fact that he was a $40 million signing in free agency and he was benched by the third quarter in the first game of the year. So that was a really big disappointment in week one. And the hopes are that he has a better matchup against Julio Jones, who, although he is quick, he's bigger and more physical. And a lot of people believe that Sean Smith matches up better with him. So that's going to be a huge key, is whether or not Sean Smith or anyone in the secondary can help kind of tamper that passing game. Otherwise, you know, I think it's going to end up being another shutout. Both the Falcons defense is not that great, and I, you know, if the Raiders can't shut down Julio Jones, they're probably going to put up some points, so it could end up being another shootout.
From Cover 32, blackholebanter.com, you find him on Twitter at Raiders Reporter. It's James Arcelana. James, appreciate the time here on the podcast this week. Thanks.
Always happy to be on.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device, or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. I mean, let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, you know, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17-35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. And so, yeah, we're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks. Notwithstanding even the offensive side, obviously what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task, because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton, and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy, and that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown, that offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense, but I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They too, okay? Now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. You know, for them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think is going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, you know, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did, or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. You had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City. If nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamaal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it for 2-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. and his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a 2-point play, or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd, and oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the 2-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hands.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. You know, I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. Maybe one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could, you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake here.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD. Just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time? I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.